Welcome to the Modern Yogi Podcast. An exploration of ancient wisdom.
Hello, hello, everyone.
And welcome to episode number
82.
And we're so happy to be with you.
We did it. We're back. Last episode we did, we are on chapter 10. We're on text number 23. But last episode we did a bunch. And this is a fun chapter.
Yeah.
Oh, my name is Shama Sangeeta.
My name is Priyadarshini.
And my name is Shamali. And 82 episodes in, we still need prompts by our great producer, Abhijit, to tell each, you guys our names.
He's like, say your name. I was like, what's my name? I was like, all right, cool. So what's happening?
So we're starting 10. An interesting section, right, where Krishna's basically saying, of this, I'm that. Of that, I'm this. And he's naming, like, so many different sections of the world, the universe's creations, and basically saying, out of this category, think of the greatest, and I'm that. Of the other category, think of the greatest. Oh, and that I am too, mm-hmm. You know? So we're going to just kind of continue in that trend.
Yeah. And what's interesting is that Arjuna also said that, like, how do you want to be remembered? You know, a couple episodes ago, we talked about Krishna's love languages. And so Arjuna asked that big question, is like, how do you want to be remembered? And what's beautiful is that Krishna is actually showing all of the different ways that we can remember him, because it's like, oh, I'm the sun, I'm the moon. You look up at the stars in the sky and then you can see the sun, the moon. Oh, that is also Krishna. So he's giving us little touch points of remembrance.
I like that. Touch points of remembrance. Yeah. The very last part of text 22 that we left off on was, of the senses, I am the mind. And in living beings, I am the living force consciousness. So like the strongest elements there, like, okay, of the senses, the mind can totally bewilder us and trap us. Well, the mind creates our reality.
It's very strong.
Right, positive or negative. So of the senses, Krishna is the strongest, the mind. Then the life force, consciousness, what would our body be without consciousness? Nothing.
Just flesh.
Yeah.
Yep. So. All right, so we're going to rock and roll with this. Yes. The invocation, please, ladies.
Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Shakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
Translation: I was born in the darkest ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto them. All right, chapter 10, text number 23.
Of all the Rudras, I am Lord Shiva, and of the Yakshas and Rakshasas, I am the Lord of Wealth, Kuvera. And of the Vasus, I am Fire, Agni. And of Mountains, I am Meru?
Yeah, Mount Meru. Yep.
Nice. So you have a definition, Priya, of what are Rudras?
Yeah, I looked it up, and it was talking about Rudras being, there's like 11 Rudras, and they are qualified as these creatures that are sort of in charge of destruction and transformation. And of them, Lord Shiva is like the leader, the powerful one.
So Lord Shiva is considered himself a Rudra.
Yes.
Mm.
That's super cool. I didn't know
interesting.
That before.
Yeah, it says there are 11 Rudras, and Shiva, which you just mentioned as being the topmost Rudra, is the incarnation of the Supreme Lord in charge of the mode of ignorance in the universe.
Mm.
You know what's so interesting in Hinduism? Like, they talk about this, trifecta?
What's it called? Shiva, Brahma, Vishnu.
It's just called something. It's like a triangle god thing in Hinduism, right? The trifecta of Hinduism.
Some of our audience will love that term there. Triangle something a bobber with them.
Yeah. The trilogy of Hinduism. That's not right.
No.
The triangle of Hinduism.
Close, I don't know what the right word is, but trilogy is like three movies.
The that's not the word I was thinking about.
Triumvirate. apparently we're saying it wrong.
The pyramid of Hinduism. Anyways, whatever. You know, the point that I'm trying to say is like, everyone thinks that Brahma and Shiva and Lord Vishnu are three separate entities, right? Mm-hmm. But I think Krishna's making it very clear right now that like, hey, no, I am all of the above.
Like they're expansions of him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. They come from him. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they just have different roles because like Krishna like can do everything. So he just goes whoop and another form of him comes out. Whoop, another form. And then he's like, okay, you are in charge of destruction and ignorance. You're in charge of creation and this and like that.
What is the sound that he makes? Whoop. Okay, and then another being is created. Trinity, that's it. Trinity, that's the word I was looking for. I was like, triangle, trifecta, Trinity.
Trilogy, too. That was so good.
Perfect, the Trinity.
Okay.
So the next section is about the Yakshas and Rakshasas. It says the leader of the Yakshas and Rakshasas is Kuvera, who is the master treasurer of the demigods, and he is a representation of the Supreme Lord.
Okay.
Do you know, Shamli, what the Yakshas are? I think you...
Well, I looked up a definition and Abhijit said apparently it is accurate if you read the Bhagavatam, the Mahabharat. There mm-hmm. we go. It sounds like it checks out. It says, Yaksha, in the mythology of India or the history of India, a class of generally benevolent but sometimes mischievous, capricious, sexually rapacious, or even murderous nature spirits who are the custodians of treasures that are hidden in the earth and in the roots of trees.
Oh, that seems on brand. Okay.
That was deep and
cool. That was very interesting.
Scary.
Kind of scary, yeah.
So, I mean, I think it's good because Krishna's kind of showing that he's not just all the good things, right? He's showing, he's talking about how he is of these Rudras that are beings of destruction. He's the most powerful.
Yeah.
Of these devious beings, Yakshas, he's also the most powerful. Of these Rakshasas, which are... They are Yamaraj's helpers, right?
Oh, the demons. They're demon. The Rakshasas. Remember, every story, like Krishna's killing all these Rakshasas that come out of the forest and stuff. So, like the demons. Yeah,
my brain got confused.
They eat humans. Yeah,
Yamaraj's assistants. What are they?
Yamadutas.
That's. I don't know why I thought that. Anyways, yes, Rakshasas are the demons that are in every story about Krishna and Ram and everyone.
It's interesting because, he's saying of these devious beings, the Yakshas and Rakshasas, I am the topmost Kuvera. I never thought of Kuvera as associated with the devious Rakshasa beings.
I mean, I think of the Rakshasas, the Yakshas, are they all bad?
No, I don't think so.
So they're kind of in between, right?
Right.
But we definitely know the Rakshasas are evil. Right? They're bad guys, right?
Yeah.
But you're right. He according to Krishna, Kuvera is the top of all of these sort of demigods, right?
And isn't Kuvera the father of Nala Kuvera and Manigriva, which we have this whole beautiful, when we say the month of Kartik is this time where we've talked about it before, that Krishna, the whole pastime where he, Mother Yashoda, his mother, bounds his belly with the rope of her love and ties him to the mortar, and then he breaks it, and out come these two trees that he broke, that he liberates the sons of Kuvera, Manigriva and Nala Kuvera.
Yes.
And they were kind of through some interesting backstory cursed to stand there as trees, but the silver lining to the curse is that they were trees in Krishna's backyard, so they were ultimately liberated by him. That's so interesting. So Kuvera though then sounds like, if he's the master treasurer of the demigods, he has his piety and his greatness. He's not just an evil Rakshasa.
Yeah, I wonder if it is the same Kuvera, but it probably is,
probably.
Right?
Yeah, the god of wealth.
Yeah.
The main master treasurer, which is interesting because Krishna, out of all of these beings, Krishna gives importance to the treasurer. So shout out to all of our accountant friends, all of our friends that deal with money.
And they take it a step further. They say that he is the representation of the Supreme Lord. Kuvera. Interesting. Wow.
Well, okay. I guess in the sense that these are all Indra as a representation, they're just manifestations of Krishna because they're in the highest form of whatever they're doing. So in that sense, potentially.
And then the last section, he's Mount Meru because it says Meru is a mountain famed for its rich natural resources. So Krishna's the topmost mountain.
Yes. Okay. And of the Vasus, he is fire. I think fire is one of those things that has so many properties. It can purify. Right. It can
destroy.
Yeah, it's very powerful. So Krishna said, I am that.
Yeah.
Okay.
You ever stared at fire before?
Yeah.
Isn't it kind of crazy?
It's beautiful.
It's magical.
It's mesmerizing.
Yeah. And that's Krishna, guys.
Aww. Oh, that was very sweet.
That was very sweet.
All right. Chapter 10, text number 24.
Shama Sangeeta.
Krishna says, of priests, O Arjuna, know me to be the chief, Brihaspati. Of generals, I am Kartikeya. And of bodies of water, I am the ocean.
So if those first two lines mean nothing, don't worry. We're going to break it down. So yeah. It says it in the purport, right?
Yes.
Indra is the chief of demigods. So basically, he is the leader of all other gods that do services for Krishna. Correct. Right? Yeah. So there's different, like, the god of water, the god of fire, the god of thunderstorms and all of that. And so Indra is like the chief most. Yeah. And this is in the heavenly planets. And so he and all of them have a like spiritual teacher or like a priest. And that person is called Brihaspati. And he is the chief of all priests. So he's like the topmost priest or like spiritual guide for these gods, so these demigods.
The guru of the demigods.
Yes.
Interesting. Wow. Okay. Very interesting. And to clarify still, this planet that Indra reigns in called Indraloka, even though it's the heavenly planet, we're still striving for something, you know, that beyond the heavenly planets, because we've talked before, that will still have to come to an end at the very last yuga in this creation, you know?
Mm-hmm. You know what's so interesting in Vedic astrology? Because I have to bring it up every episode.
Yeah, of course. It's your duty.
I have a problem. But anyways, Brihaspati is actually known as the planet of Jupiter. Mm. And Jupiter is known to be the guru. So whenever, like, if you want to check someone's spirituality in their chart, you check how strong Jupiter is. Another name for Jupiter is Brihaspati, because it's all about learning spiritual wisdom. It's all about guru relationships and your relationship with guru. And so everything about spirituality is Brihaspati.
Interesting. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, that's super cool.
Yep.
I also, just random note, you mentioned Indraloka, and I always thought it was so funny and random because in Spanish, loca means crazy. And right. So like all of these planets end with crazy. Into crazy.
Yeah. Remember, where does Ricky Martin go after he dies? Live in La Vida Loca.
But didn't. That's funny. Very good. So, okay, right. So we established that, right, Brihaspati, the chief of Indra, and it says as Indra is the chief of all kings. Similarly, Skanda or Kartikeya is the son of Parvati, and Lord Shiva is the chief of all military commanders.
Oh, yes, because he said, of generals, I am Kartikeya.
Ah,
so
yes.
So Kartikeya was really big in his army. He was the general. He's also the brother of Lord Ganesh.
Do you guys know?
Which is interesting.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That's cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he's the son of Parvati and Lord Shiva. And Ganesh is the son of Lord Parvati and... I mean, Lord Shiva and Parvati.
Wait, Kartikeya wasn't there on the battlefield, was he? In Kurukshetra? In this battle?
No.
So I got... Okay.
No. He's just an incredible military man.
Of the heavenly realms.
Yeah.
Right. Military commander.
Right.
Do you guys know any military commanders of the United States?
Oh, geez.
Oof.
Me neither.
Well, that's a weird question. I was just thinking,
like, I was thinking, like, oh, is there anyone that, like, someone, like, people really revered, like, to give them an imagery of, like, what Kartikeya could have, like, visualized for them? But I couldn't think of anyone. Yeah. And I was like, maybe they will know, but...
No, but I think that there's a certain reverence, right? So my partner used to be in the army, and like she can tell when there's like, according to like their
rankings,
mm-hmm. right? Like she can tell, and especially what unit they're placed in, she'd be like, oh my God, okay, that person's like a top dog here. Like he runs this whole thing. And it's like she could just tell based off of how they address people, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think Kartikeya was just like the top dog of the army at that
super
time.
Cool.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Top dog in the most respectful way, I mean, you know.
Right. I don't know why I thought of this. Maybe thinking of military commanders and thinking this whole setting is on a battlefield. And we actually briefly spoke about this the other day with my sister and my friend. We were watching this animation, this anime, and it was beautifully drawn. And it was about this whole battle that was happening where like colonizers were overtaking this one area of Japan, and they came with their guns. And up until then, all of the Japanese had been trained in sword fighting and the ancient techniques. And for a second, my mind went to this whole fight that's going on and the battlefield of Kurukshetra, which we're reading about. And they were so well trained it was so almost this noble art form of like, because in this animation, it was actually really sad. The kind of like colonizers were coming with their guns and just poo, poo, shooting everyone. And they didn't stand a chance.
better.
Yeah. And it felt so unjust and not noble at all. And they were all these ancient, like there was the samurai fighters there ready with their swords, and didn't matter their talent or their skill, they were just shot from a mile away, you know? Wow. And it just made me think of this. There was so much nobility and dignity that came in. They had all of these rules of like, if you have a club, you have to go against someone with a club, or like they made it so just and so fair. And they had so much, it was not just cheap fighting from a distance away. It had so much weight there in honoring the code of arms.
There was righteousness. Yeah. There was like a code. It was a code. Everyone stuck to it. Like if someone didn't have a weapon, you couldn't attack them with a weapon, you know?
Totally.
It's like, there was a code that would never ever work in Kali Yuga, but they had it because it was a better time.
Yeah. And all these mantras that Arjuna knew how to invoke, all of these like mystical, powers that he used to activate the Brahmastra weapon, and it would go against, like, I'm forgetting all the names, but it just was such a different time. Like, you can't even imagine. I don't think we've even touched upon so much the actual fighting that's going down, because we haven't even gotten there. They're in the conversation, but it was something else that doesn't exist nowadays.
Yeah. That reminds me of the Ramayana, and like, I don't know. I remember watching these like shows about like Ramachandra and like all these different shows that they used to be like, I think they were only in Hindi or something, and I didn't even know what they were saying, but you would see like that they had these arrows, that one arrow split into 500 arrows.
In the middle of the air,
they would light on fire, and then they would reach exactly the person that needed to reach.
The worst graphics ever.
It was so great.
I get what you're trying to say.
And so like visually, I'm visualizing the power that they had because of the religiosity.
Thank you.
The
Trinity, the triangle.
The religious, I can't
the
say
religiosity.
I'm not going to try. But yes.
They were very spiritual.
Yeah. And so that gave them powers, and it gave them these weapons that were beyond our perception and understanding.
Right. And I love that you bring up in the story of Ram, because I think this episode is going to be posted on or the day before Ram Nomi, right?
It's going to be posted on Ram Nomi.
On Ram Nomi. Oh. So why don't we just take a brief 1 second pit stop on what is Ram Nomi?
Sure.
I just Googled it.
It is the birthday of Lord Ram.
It is, right?
Yes, it is.
Yes.
Sure.
Yes, it is.
It is.
I forget. I just kind of I forget if it's like we're just honoring him or his birthday. So I forget the technicalities. Yes. I know the gist of it. We're honoring Lord Ram, but it's his appearance, right?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So Lord Vishnu had a number of avatars, and Lord Ram is an avatar of Lord Vishnu.
Yeah, the birth. I just looked it up.
So he was an Aries, which makes sense because he was.
That's so funny. Of course, you would think
Lord
of that.
Ram was an Aries. Wait, it makes sense because why?
Because he was like a very like he only did things the right way. Like they're very rule followers. They're very like strong leaders. Mm. They're very like. Straightforward.
Wow. Yeah. Lord Ram was an Aries.
Okay.
So I just looked it up. Ram Nomi is the Hindu festival that celebrates the birth of Ram, one of the most popularly revered deities in Hinduism, also known as the seventh avatar of Vishnu. He's often held as an emblem of being an ideal king and human through his righteousness, good conduct, and virtue. And the festival falls on the ninth day of the bright half of the lunar cycle. Right. So, okay.
All right.
Sorry.
Shalmi just trailed out there, but we're going to probably edit that out.
I thought you would appreciate the astrology part of it.
Finish your thought process.
It felt weird coming from you, though.
Yeah, it didn't fit. So that's it.
What was that? So it was the ninth day of the what?
Of the bright half of the lunar cycle.
Yeah.
And it's the first month in the Hindu calendar. It's also part of the Chaitra Navaratri festival in spring. I have no idea what that means.
I think it's Navaratri because there's two Navaratris that are happening. In it right now.
Is that? Can I ask you a question about it?
Yeah.
It's Goddess Durga.
That's what I was about to ask. I knew that it was the Goddess Durga's celebration, but I didn't know more beyond that. Okay, cool.
Yeah. And of bodies of water, I am the ocean.
So we're back to the text now.
Right. So Krishna is saying, of bodies of water, I am the ocean.
And why the ocean? Because
do we know any other great
Bodies of water.
Well, okay. The reason is, think about like lakes are smaller.
Yeah.
We got an Eber. Rivers are smaller. Pond, super small. Oceans are Krishna because they're the biggest.
Yeah. But like deepest.
Okay, we got to move on. So yeah, Prabhupada says, of all bodies of water, the ocean is the greatest. And these representations of Krishna only give hints of his greatness.
I love that.
I loved ponds, smaller. Cups of water, even smaller. We shed such light to these texts.
But you know what's so interesting is that, have you ever been out in the ocean and you just, like, I like to, when I first moved to Los Angeles, I didn't have any friends, so.
That was a personal choice. I'm just kidding.
For like 3 months, like, I didn't know anybody. And for those three months, you know what I did every weekend? This is going to sound so nerdy. What? I went whale watching.
I know.
I went whale watching because I love whales. Oh. And I'm pretty sure Krishna at some point says, of fishes, I'm a whale. But I don't think he does. I wish he did.
Okay, let's see if we get there.
Yeah. But the point is, like, if you ever are out into the ocean and you really just, like, are looking for whales or whatever you're doing on the ocean, like, you can feel the vastness of the ocean. Even if you're on the shore watching the sunset, you see the vastness of the ocean. Because we are so lucky to live in California and see the Pacific Ocean all the time. And it's like, oh, my God, it still takes my breath away. So,
yeah. You know, I just scrolled a few texts ahead and it said, of fishes I am. The shark. Not the whale. Not the whale.
Oh. That's okay. We'll get them next time.
We'll get there.
But that imagery that you just said, it reminded me of that one time Shama and I went surfing. And we used to go surfing all the time. We haven't done it in a long time. But
I got you a board. We're going again this summer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I got on Facebook Marketplace, but that's probably something I shouldn't have said on air.
We'll edit that out.
Anyways, we used to go like around 7 a.m. And so on like Saturday or Sunday, whatever. Anyways, one of the mornings we came and we were just, every time, Shaman and I are not from California. So every time we would go, we would just be so amazed and grateful to be there.
Yeah.
The ocean, it just gives you like a sense of peace. And the nature of it all. But also we happened to be there and all of a sudden this incredible amount of fog came into the whole beach and we could barely see each other. Like we were in the water and it was like so foggy, but it was so incredible, just like Krishna's creations and to see all of that. And like, I've never experienced anything like that. And that just came into my mind when you were talking about the ocean. Like I just, nature, Krishna's creations.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Beautiful.
It is so beautiful.
The ocean is so vast. You can really feel that.
All right.
Yeah.
Text number 25.
All right. Of the great sages, I am Bhrigu. That's how you say it?
Yes.
Bhrigu. Mm-hmm. Of vibrations, I am the transcendental Om. Of sacrifices, I am the chanting of the holy names.
Wow.
In brackets, Japa. And of immovable things, I am the Himalayas. Beautiful.
Wow. Okay. Wow. So I'm assuming Bhrigu was a pretty cool sage. The most powerful sage.
Right. So it breaks it down. Brahma, which we've established is the first living creature within the universe, created several suns for the propagation of various kinds of species. So among these suns, Bhrigu is the most powerful sage.
So he's the son of Brahma.
Okay, nice.
Pretty easy to understand. Also, the fact that it says of vibrations, I am the trans. Of the sacrifices, I am. Of sacrifices, I am the chanting of the holy name, Japa.
Hmm.
I never heard of Japa being referred to as a sacrifice.
Right. Mm.
And that's really fascinating that Krishna himself is saying it. Because I think many times in, I can't speak for y'all, but I do think it feels like a sacrifice in certain times in life.
Oh, absolutely.
For so many people. And so to know that Krishna is saying like, yes, I know this is a sacrifice, but like that is me in there and like, it's kind of giving me a new perspective on Japa too.
That caught my attention also. I was like, sacrifice. What does that mean? But I interpreted, Priya, similar to you. I felt like there was one senior devotee once that said, when someone asked him what was the hardest part of Krishna consciousness, and he said, chanting my rounds every day and keeping up with that vow, because there are times when it'll feel beautiful, but then there's many other times where it's going to be like, oh my gosh, what a packed it's been. And I have not chanted a single round.
Yeah.
And it's fine if you like, if you're just, you know, walking the path at your own pace. But if you do try to make a commitment to chant, then that becomes hard to uphold. And I remember my guru, Kadamba Kanamraj, used to say, because I've described before, he had cancer by the end and he was still chanting, like struggling through. And his spiritual master, Jayadwaita Maharaj, told him, "It's okay, Maharaj. You don't have to still chant your rounds. Like, you're dying. It's understandable. You can make each bead account for a whole mantra." And Maharaj, like gasping for air and not taking any painkillers with his stage four cancer, said, "No, because if I don't struggle, my disciples will think they don't have to struggle either." And I thought it was interesting. He called it like a struggle, you know? Yeah. It is a struggle sometimes to chant your rounds. It's a sacrifice.
And I love that Krishna is acknowledging that this is a sacrifice, which is really beautiful. And I feel like he cares about what we do and how we chant his names. Yeah.
You know, I want to say one thing that popped into my head, because I talked about it with a friend recently who also was talking about maybe not feeling it so much, not feeling that connection so much in Krishna consciousness. And it made me think of a whole conversation I had with my dad one night when my guru was still alive. And I was kind of like, I think I was going through a whole crisis of, I'm far away, he's dying, I'm not soaking in the time with him. And I told my dad, I'm not feeling the connection. I don't feel it. And my dad at that point said, you know what? It's not about the feeling. Beautiful, the moments that Krishna graces you with a strong feeling, but it's what are you going to do even when you're not feeling it, when you're traversing that desert, and there's going to be so many times where it'll feel really sad because you don't feel anything and you're going to feel disconnected. But what are you going, you show the quality and the maturity and depth of your devotion when, what are you going to do when you're not feeling it? Am I just going to give up because I'm not feeling it? Then that feels so whimsical and superficial, because you just trudge forward and Krishna will so greatly reward you depending on what you do when you're not feeling it. And he'll reward you with the feeling when the time is right, you know, but it's so much deeper than just, am I feeling it or not feeling it?
Right. Do you guys have something that you remind yourself, like when you're struggling with japa or whatever other part of your sadhana, that's like, I'm doing it because of this, you know, for a lot of other things in life, you know, people who maybe exercise, they're like, I'm doing it because I want to be healthy, or I'm doing it because I want muscle, or I'm doing it like that. Sometimes the reasoning or like what we tell ourselves is what pushes us through, because it is hard to stay committed to something that is challenging at many times. And it isn't always
exciting, fun,
whatever it might be. So is there something you tell yourselves to encourage yourself to be like, mind over matter, like I got to remember why I'm doing this kind of something?
Yeah, I think for me, I don't want to speak for you, but like if you have a near death experience, like the car accident, where now when I'm chanting, I'm like, now I'm practicing for that moment because that moment can happen at any point. And I'm practicing for the moment because I don't want to fail. Because if I fail, I come back again. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to come back again. So I have to remind myself that I'm practicing for the final exam. And that takes time and discipline. Wow. And I can't screw that up again. Yeah.
That's really, that says it all, I think. That's really good.
What about you, Shamali?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if there's one thing, maybe different things at different times. I've had shadows of that, what Shama said, because I was in that car accident. There's been, and it just brings death to such a real platform. So I'm someone who always thinks of death anyway. So then with that perspective, it's easy to try to like, kind of like connect the feeling to like, I want to really not let this life pass me by. I want to kind of, it's a feeling of like, if I have to put it to words, life goes so fast, and sometimes before you know it, decades have passed and you haven't done whatever you said you were going to do. So before that time happens, I really want to maximize this life that I have to connect to Krishna. So it's not that I'm thinking of that always, but those are some the moments of clarity when you kind of snap back to it, like, wait, yeah, of course I have to prioritize this. What am I doing? You know, and you bring yourself back. And just a second thought, it made me think also, when you're not feeling this, it helps to remember Ridayananda Maharaj really beautifully says that, you know, for anyone in the beginning of your spiritual journey, it's exciting. You're feeling it. You're connected. So beautiful. It's like you're tasting the nectar. But he says the point where it becomes difficult is where you hit the point of growth where you left off in your past life. Mm. And that's where you have to start doing the legwork. Oh, wow. And I love that thought,
that's
you
wild.
Know?
That's so interesting.
That's where it becomes hard. And that's where you got to start, like, almost like when you work out, that's where you start building the muscle. And it's not going to be fun. It's going to be a struggle. And you're probably not going to feel it.
That's such a good perspective, though. That's such an interesting.
Yeah.
I never heard that before.
Yeah.
I almost feel like I can pinpoint when that happened in my life.
Right.
It's like incredible.
Because then for so many people, when they stop feeling, it's like, ah, maybe this isn't for me, and they leave. And it's like, no, that just means that you hit the spot where you left off in your past life. And now it's time to do the work.
You know, for me, what it has been in the past, it wasn't so much that this isn't for me, because I've never felt that about Krishna consciousness. I've always been pretty good. Like, this gives me joy. I'm grateful. Yeah. Like,
and I mean, Krishna's been in your life from the beginning.
Right. It's a big part of my life. But for me, it's more like, I'm not doing it right. If I can't do it right, maybe I shouldn't be doing it at all. Like, it's a weird, like, overthinking psychology of, like, perfectionism that I already struggle with in a general sense. Mm-hmm. And so it can translate to anything. And so, like, I'll be like, well, I'm not as attentive as I should be. So maybe I should just not. And it's just
I'll try again tomorrow.
It's crazy psychology because it doesn't actually, and, like, I have to remind myself, like, I don't have to be perfect. I just have to try. Like, that's sort of like my reminder.
Totally.
I don't have to be perfect. I just have to keep trying, right? Like, I can't give up. Like, I have to keep trying, and I'm not always successful, but, like, I think it's interesting, like, how I think a lot of people struggle with japa for many different reasons.
Right.
Like, you guys have both, weirdly enough, been fortunate enough to be in a near-death experience where it does bring a different awareness that most of us don't have.
Yeah.
Like, I can think about death and I don't have, like, I can't really fear it. I don't fear it. Mm, I'm like, you know, whatever happens, happens. Krishna, you want me to live another life and try to do other things? I guess that's what I will do. Like, I will continue to be in your service. That's my goal. But, like, I wish I, you know, I don't know.
Do you want your death experiences to happen? Because we can help facilitate that.
No.
We should push it downstairs.
I just told you that I used to fall down the stairs a lot as a child today.
Did you actually?
I did.
Oh, wow. Okay, let's not push it downstairs.
That was your idea. Don't look at me. Speak for yourself.
Okay. So, but I get it. It's like hard to not, if you haven't had those experiences, to have that same sense of urgency.
Yeah. And I've heard things such as, like, oh, Srila Prabhupada would say, like, or I don't know if it was Srila Prabhupada, so let me not make that statement. But, like, people of, like, gurus have said, like, well, if, you know, if Krishna wants me to come back to continue the preaching movement, then that is. And I'm like, I get it, which is crazy because I don't think it's true. I don't think I actually get it, but I don't, I don't understand. Like, I wish I had more fear of death.
Yeah.
In a sense.
Interesting.
To be able to, I'm not very fearful. And so therefore it's not about fear. It's about just commitment. And commitment is hard. And so it's like, I don't know. I'm just opening the conversation because I do feel like a lot of people struggle and I'm just like, how do we cope?
I like that you say it's about commitment because it made me hearing you saying that kind of my follow-up thought was like, right. Like, like if a mom or a dad all of a sudden wakes up and isn't feeling the joy of parenting, it's not like they're like, well, you know, I'm not going to do it today. I'm not feeling it today. It's like, that's kind of like crazy. Like, no, you just do it. So with japa, it's funny to just say, no, you just do it. Even if you don't feel it, but it is similar because it's a sacrifice and a commitment. And if I'm going to just stop when I don't feel it, I remember, like with that whole conversation with my guru, because, you know, in a way for me, it was like having to go from 0 to 100 in the guru disciple relationship, because all within the first days of meeting him, I already knew his death was coming. So normally you have decades to establish a beautiful relationship. And then at the end of becoming really mature in that relationship, then you consider, like, okay, really going deeper with, like, they're not going to be physically present and I have to become a mature disciple now and live really by following their instruction. And that's how I'm going to get the connection. But so in that conversation, I was just kind of like, almost like a, I don't know. I want to feel the connection. I felt it for sure, but this was a time when I wasn't. And that's when my dad was saying, this is when you show, are you going to be like a, he said, like a crying baby, he told me. And I was like, Pa, I'm not like a crying baby. And he was just kind of giving me tough love in that moment. And we have a really nice connection. So he can also say things like that to me. But then he's like, no, this is what it means to be a mature disciple. Are you going to just base it all on the feeling? That's so superficial. Mm-hmm. And if that's what you think it's about, you don't understand it. It goes so, so much deeper than that.
Yeah. And I think for you, Priya, or anyone else who's listening, who's in that similar situation, I think it's on us to find the different factors of motivation, right?
Yeah.
Whether that is having a conversation with your guru or having a mentor to keep you accountable or going deeper in Shastra to like understand things at a deeper level, understand the importance of japa and like really, really understand why we're doing the things that we do, right?
Totally.
And people are motivated differently, right? Whether it's through books or through your guru having a conversation with you or your mentor keeping you accountable. Mm-hmm. I think we need to find our own ways to keep ourselves accountable because if no one's watching us, it's so easy just to fall down and fall apart, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's a great point. Find the way also to keep you accountable and motivated. Yeah. Kadama Kadamaraj always spoke about that. If you're feeling stagnant, do something to find the inspiration. Whether you go on a walk and you're enjoying nature and pick flowers for Krishna and your little deities at home, do something because you can find the nectar. And he often said, if I am just chanting my 16 rounds and following the regulative principles, that's like looking at a menu and going to most boring section and I'm just barely doing that and getting by. He was very like blunt about it. I thought that was so funny because it's true. It's if you're just relying on the nectar from just like following the principles and chanting your rounds, unless you're a pure devotee, chanting might not give you that much emotion, you know? So you got to do something to inspire yourself.
And find your own factors of motivation, right? For some people, like I was talking to a friend yesterday and his motivation, he loves Harinam. Like it's hard for him to stick to a chanting
schedule. That's so funny. I sometimes feel embarrassed on Harinam
I know,
myself.
Exactly, right? So every as like different strokes for different folks,
totally.
Right? Like I couldn't do book distribution or Harinam to save my life, you know what I mean? But like he loves it. And so like, that's what keeps him engaged in service. So we need to create our own methods of enthusiasm
Absolutely.
And motivation.
You know, I love that we have this podcast. So much appreciation for you ladies, because earlier, even that we were at this housewarming and we had to kind of branch out for a second to talk about this meeting. And I was just thinking, it feels so good to have some purpose, to have something to do, to engage your attention, your creativity in. Like if you have an active mind, you engage your thoughts in like, how do I make this project happen? And it's so nice to have this platform that you can engage that in service.
Yeah. And I think this podcast is also a motivation for me too, because if I am helping people learn more about bhakti yoga, okay, what do I need to fill my own cup? Right. And so like, whether that is japa or reading more, it's like, we need to make sure that whatever we're putting out there, we're also filling our own cup. And
that's
a source of motivation for me.
Yeah. And for people listening, if they think, well, what can I even do? It can be a simple step of like starting a little weekly book club then with your friends, like choose a book you're going to read or follow along reading with us and then get together with friends and make it a thing, like make it into something enlivening.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I also, growing up in the temple in Houston, there was a lot of japa retreats and I thought those were really actually kind of inspiring. We would do a lot of conversations about what japa is and inspirational things. And then for one of the days, we would fully not talk for the whole day.
Oh my gosh.
And just chant like 64 rounds of japa.
Wow.
How did that feel?
It was really cool experience. I mean, I can't remember all the details because I am a bit of a goldfish, but I remember it being a really wonderful experience. And so for people looking for things like that, I think there's a Holy Name retreat that happens in Chicago that is a japa retreat that is done by Romapad Swami. And you can just Google any of these things and you should be able to find it.
Yeah.
And also, Giriraj Maharaj, he has, and I don't know if it's just for like his disciples, but he has like a morning japa session.
I think it's for everyone. It's on Facebook live.
Anyone can join on Facebook. Wow. And so if you're looking for like a group of people to chant with, like you put it in the background and then there's a sense of like togetherness and accountability if you try to show up to that every day.
That's Giriraj Maharaj. How would you spell it? G-I-R-I. Take it away, Priya.
R-A-J.
Giriraj Maharaj.
And then Maharaj.
Yeah, and follow
it. Or Swami. I think it might be Giriraj Swami.
Yeah, one of those.
Yeah, and I also, another thing that was really helpful before I took initiation is like my mentor set up like a Excel spreadsheet of like, okay, every single day you have to mark an X on the days that you chanted and whatnot. And so like, I am crazy with Excel. So I wanted to fill out all of those X's. I didn't want to miss anything. And so so that's my own way that she motivated me to make sure I committed to something.
Wow. Yeah. Nice.
You got to find your own motivations.
Right. Find a mentor, find a friend, start a book club, whatever works for you. It is challenging and and know that we all struggle.
Oh, totally.
But we're also all trying.
Yeah.
To the best of our abilities.
So. Yeah. That's what Krishna sees.
Speaking of, we also have a lady sangha happening on May 11th in Southern California, in West LA.
That's my mama's birthday.
May 11th? Yeah. Oh, wow. She should come.
She's in Argentina. Never mind. She would love to.
Okay. But if you are a lady in Southern California, we would love to see you there. So send us a DM at Modern Yogi Podcast.
Yeah.
Nice.
All right.
The last one.
Oh, I was just going to say, right, because in the purport, it repeats again of all sacrifices, the chanting of the Maha Mantra is the purest representation of Krishna. I thought, hey, Priya, not to put you on the spot or anything, but would you like to kind of, in a beautiful melodic voice, just chant the mantra there?
Because I forgot it for a second.
I forgot it. What's the line?
I don't know what it is.
You say it and we'll all repeat with you.
We all have goldfish memories. Yeah, and so like, Priya, if you could just remind us what the mantra is, that'd be great.
Guys, how about we all chant it the way that it's done at every temple? Every time
you set the melody and we'll all three then repeat. So Priya's gonna set the beautiful melody and then we all three repeat.
Love it.
Love it. Go.
I've already closed my eyes. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm ready.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare.
Right, that was beautiful. I love when you put her on the spot like that.
I just love.
I love your voice. Can I just say one thing? You're gonna squirm a little bit, but we did a university program where we had to talk about the Modern Yogi Podcast just earlier this week, and literally I was telling someone about this. This is why it's fresh in my mind. And then Priya led kirtan, and I literally told my friend, I was like, I feel like Krishna shows up when Priya sings, and he just sits there and he just listens to her voice.
Oh my God.
I really, really mean that with my whole heart. So really appreciate
you're
you.
You're gonna make me cry.
He just shows, he just sits there and he puts his hand underneath his chin and he just listens to you. And I really, really, I really felt that. It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if there's 1,000 people in the room or like 5 people. He just shows up and listens. So, all right. Krishna is the transcendental Om. We talked about that. He is the sound of Om, which is very interesting. Anything else on the Om?
And then after that, whatever sublime in the world is a representation of Krishna. So it's interesting. He says that's why the Himalayas, the greatest mountain in the world, is also a representation of him. And Prabhupada says, I know we just mentioned the mountain Meru in a previous verse, but Meru is apparently sometimes movable. I've never tried. Whereas the Himalayas are never movable.
That's good to know. You've never tried, huh?
No, never tried. And that's why the Himalayas are greater than Meru, and thus that's Krishna.
Wow. For a second, I thought Prabhupada said, I've never tried. And I was like, what?
Shamali's never tried.
Wait, anything else before we wrap up?
Nope.
All right. This has been beautiful, ladies.
Beautiful.
We are going to join. Please join us next time.
And we'll join you too
on chapter 10, text number 26.
Beautiful.
See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Hello, beautiful souls. If you like what you're hearing, please follow us on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast.
And if you love what you're hearing, please make sure to share a link to our podcast at Modern Yogi Podcast with all your friends, families, and long lost cousins.
And if you have any questions at all, send us a DM on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast, and we'll be sure to get back to you.
Thank you for listening to
The Modern Yogi.